The Women of Ill Repute, with your hosts, Wendy Mesley and Maureen Holloway.
So, hey, Maureen, you're outdoorsy, aren't you?
No, it depends on the outdoors. I like doing some things outdoors, you know, like outdoorsy things, like walking and hiking and golfing. All those things have to be done outdoors. Sailing, definitely outdoors, skiing and cycling. But, you know, I'm such a, what is it called, a blue sky or a fair weather outdoorsy person? I'm a snowflake. I don't like getting cold. I'm a snowflake who doesn't like the cold. You're outdoorsy.
I don't know. I beg to differ a little bit because I've seen you in a canoe. So I'd say you're pretty sporty. But yeah, I like, even when it's not a blue sky, I like it. And now that I have more time, that I'm sort of semi-retired, just doing a podcast, just 20 or 30 hours a week, I am trying to indulge my true loves, which are skiing and windsurfing. And I do that in bad weather, although nobody really windsurfs anymore. So let's pretend and call it foiling, which is, everybody does. I foil. Yes, I'm a foiler.
Foiled again. There's a difference though, between sporty and outdoorsy. They're not necessarily the same thing. Like I love the outdoors, but I do not like camping.
I love camping. And I actually, well, my husband won't go. I went with my mom on a trip on the Inca Trail in Peru and we slept on the ground, but I had to take along my special pillow.
You had your special pillow. Okay.
Noise machine.
Oh, well, that's not camping. It's like I went camping in the Sahara Desert. It's glamping. And we had a whole Berber tribe that would serve us meals on silver. I mean, sure, we were in the middle of the Sahara, but that's not really camping. Not you and your mom, not camping. No.
Well, it was camping as far as I was concerned, but my husband wouldn't call it camping. So, no.
Well, either way, neither of us suffer from FOGO.
FOGO?
Yeah, fear of, it's like FOMO, but it's fear of going outside instead of fear of missing out. And it's also a podcast. It's a podcast about the outdoors for people who don't necessarily like the outdoors.
Ew, 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 what did I just touch? My family came to America as refugees from Vietnam because my father had a bounty on his head by the communist government. So, generally speaking, my kind of people only go into the woods if we're being shot at. I'm Ivy Lee, and this is FOGO, Fear of Going Outside, a Spotify sound-up series. FOGO is a nature show with the most reluctant host ever, which isn't saying much because most nature shows are hosted by reckless white men.
I mean, I would do anything to just not be right here, right now.
This is getting that bad for you, huh? Girl, I feel you. Yeah.
Yeah, I've heard of FOGO. It's hosted by Ivy Lee, which is Ivy L-E with one E. She's a comedian from Austin, Texas. She describes herself as an indoors woman. She's an Asian mom with severe allergies, really helpful when you're camping. And she decided that she was going to like face this fear. She was going to take up camping. And I've got a bit of a cold. You can hear that in the background, I think, maybe.
Yeah. You sound frail, and that's so deceptive. But back to Ivy, she didn't just take up camping. She did, I guess, in her first season, but the second season of FOGO, Ivy takes up hunting.
Like with tracking and and shooting and field, chopping things up.
And butchering, because you should eat what you kill.
Really? Why? I don't know.
No. You should eat what you kill because that's the responsible thing to do. Otherwise, you're just out there murdering creatures.
I don't get the whole hunting thing. Like, why would you want to hunt in the first place?
Well, you know, at least according to Ivy and some of the people she's hunted with, women actually make good hunters. A lot of feminine traits like being stealthy and quiet and thrifty and compassionate make women good hunters.
So you go for it. I don't know. I think we should talk to Ivy because it's quite the jump to go from like a little hike, which is you're very good at, to like butchering, what is it, a wild pig?
Yep, it sure is. So let's find out more about that particular aspect of camping. Ivy Lee with an E. Welcome to Women of Ill Repute. How are you doing?
I'm so excited to be here. I have been a woman of ill repute for a very long, long time.
Yeah, we figured as much. So let's get straight to Wendy's question. Why? Why, for somebody who likes the indoors, why did you decide that this was something you needed to explore?
Because I'm not famous enough to sell a show where I enjoy myself. People want to see me suffer. People love to see comedians suffer for their art. And they do, and I do mean just like whinging and moaning the entire time, just being in bad situations. So the answer to why do I want to go hunting? I don't. I didn't want to go camping. I never have. And I didn't want to go hunting and I never have. But to me, because I don't know anything about the outdoors, I was like, well, I mean, I tried hunting. I mean, I tried camping. How hard can hunting be? Because to me, I kind of paint the outdoors with one broad stroke. You guys hike and camp and stuff like that and canoe, apparently. So you know that there are nuances, I guess, like levels and steps like between these outdoor activities. To me, it's all one broad bucket that I call white nonsense. Turns out it cannot be contained in one bucket. Yeah, hunting's a completely different bucket. But by the time I figured that out, it was like episode 8 and it was like too late to turn back.
Yeah, so I've seen that you say all of the nature shows, which apparently you're a huge fan of because you can watch them from inside, but that they're all hosted by reckless white men. Are you trying to like take over? You're saying I'm not a reckless white man and I'm gonna?
Are you trying to appropriate it? Yeah,
to reverse colonize. I want. Yeah. Oh, yeah. If you know anybody at the CBC who would make it, I absolutely want to sell FOGO the TV show, the television experience. Absolutely. Because I think people, indoor people and outdoor people, like to watch nature shows. Like, what's not fun about nature shows? They're like the highlight reel of Earth. Right? But then I want to ask the follow-up question, like, okay, and then what happens? But then the outdoor person never asks the real questions that indoor people want to know.
True. So I guess the question is, has it been worth it? Have you enjoyed? We'll start with the camping part because the hunting thing, we're going to spend a fair amount of time on that because it's foreign to us. But do you consider yourself a camper now?
No. I thought y'all listened to the show. Absolutely not. It was so terrible. I went in July. I got a yeast infection from just practicing camping. It was so hot. I was the only person of color that decided to stay overnight on the entire campsite. It was, there was an old white man who was like kept checking in our camp, wondering what we were doing and asking questions while we were trying to get things done. He ended up being a sweetheart, but only because I reverse colonized his campsite with my cooking ability. Do you know what I mean? No, it was loud. Nature is so loud. People say, oh, they're going out for peace and quiet. We have cicadas and birds and just brush. All the leaves are crunchy. They're constantly making noise. You can't take a quiet step anywhere in nature. There's fire ants. There's poison ivy everywhere. No, I went and it was so hard to go. I thought, oh, people must go through this because it's nice. And I get there and I'm like, no, it's busted. This place is busted. I have never gone camping since.
Yeah. What about the stars?
Don't you love it now? Didn't you have a reawakening?
I think this is why outdoor people never ask the real questions, because you guys just go into it assuming that like, oh, people just need to experience it and then it'll be nice. What about like the neon signs that are wrought by artists that light up the night? What about the reflection of street lights on a rainy street? What about, you know, what about food trucks, the American dream lining up corners with their food trucks and their lights and families going out after their late night shifts, trying to catch a meal together at 11 o'clock at night. Like, what? How about that? Why don't you guys like the city more?
Because so you were converted, obviously.
you can like both. But to me, the thing that I don't like about camping, and I went to camp, and I went to actually a girls' camp that specialized in canoe trips. I mean, that's a very Canadian thing, too. I mean, kids come from all over the world to experience the Canadian wilderness. What I didn't like was that I love food, and it's a struggle to make the simplest thing. Like, you're starving all the time, and macaroni and cheese is like considered like the most delicious thing in the world, and we would literally eat it off a rock, and I hated that. And the other thing is that just the sheer discomfort. You're exhausted, and so you sleep well because you're exhausted, but you're sleeping on the ground. We slept under canoes that you would put sideways and then stretch a tarpaulin to keep the rain off because it rained the whole time. And I hated it. And that is why I hate camping, because of the discomfort and the lack of luxury. Let's put it that way.
I don't think it's even luxury that you were looking for. You were just looking for like the bottom of the pyramid of Maslow's hierarchy of needs.
Yes, just basic shelter. Like, come on. And that was denied.
Like, that sounds like what my parents went through in the refugee camp, except your parents, who allegedly love you, sent you to this camp.
There's a whole subtext there. My parents sent me to a boarding school and a sleepover camp. We'll go there some other time.
Oh, I
you had more than a tarp at the refugee camp?
No, her parent, Ivy's parents.
Yeah, I think it is a little bit of a different perspective because...
A little bit?
Yeah.
Just a little bit. So was that a reckless white guy who came by and was making sure that you knew how to camp?
I mean, he looked pretty reckless to me. He was sunburnt to hell. He, you know, definitely, he probably... they were eating relatively well at their camp, but they had what it sounds like y'all would consider glamping. You know, they had like fancy stoves. They had like two RVs and a tarp kind of over in between, which is exactly how I would do it if I was in their shoes. They had, you know, three generations. Like I absolutely would not take my small children to camp under conditions that I camped. I think that would be reckless and irresponsible. So he had a better setup, but because that's what you should do if you have children and you're going to kind of just throw them into the outdoors.
Speaking of what white men do, and this is very much the case in Canada as well, hunting is very much the domain of the white man. I mean, we're a very diverse society here, but I mean, my husband and I have a cottage up north and we only use it in the summer. If you go up in November, it's a different place. It's filled with white middle-aged guys and a lot of dead deer. And it looks like a battlefield. It looks like a bloodbath. So you have gone hunting in Texas. Is it a similar situation?
Well, I mean, I don't know. I've never been to a village of cottages in North Canada. I don't suspect that it's as diverse as Texas is, even in the hunting off season. But certainly what... so really what you're saying is when deer season happens, all the women leave your village, your summer village.
Yes, but here, the women leave the village.
You're just like all the white women who are normally there leave the village, and you go back to the cities that are diverse. Here in Texas, we're a very diverse state. I don't know, people outside of my state, out in the United States, I think don't always believe that, but we are one of the most diverse places in the country. I don't know how that compares to Canada. I've not been north of the Mason-Dixon line very much in my life, and y'all are way north of the Mason-Dixon line. But
way north.
But what I found, it wasn't just that numbers-wise, it's dominated by white men. It's dominated by white men because of our America's particularly racialized history. When you kind of think about it, just kind of, if you're just like a kid thinking about this, you're like, okay, well, if humans eat meat, they have to hunt, right? Like if you learn in school, there are dinosaurs that are carnivores, there are dinosaurs that are herbivores, and there are dinosaurs that are omnivores. Humans are omnivore animals. And if you're a child kind of thinking through it, you're like, okay, so like all humans at some point must hunt. So it doesn't make sense that hunting would be such a specific demographic of like tall white men who are rich and usually land owning white men. But because of our particular history, where we pretty much killed all the indigenous people who hunt, and that's in the West, right? Black people in the United States, I don't know what the history of Canada was, black people in the United States were forcibly brought here and they had to hunt because they weren't given enough calories usually by their slave owners, you know? And so they were hunting, but then after we freed the slaves, it turns out that we passed all these laws to make it so that it was nearly impossible for black people to hunt because people were sore about it, but they were sore about outlawing slavery. So they wanted to somehow force black people back into slavery. Like, can we just have it? Like, okay, wink, wink, we're not going to have slavery, but can we have something kind of like it? You know, that's what they were trying to do. So all these Black folks who were freed now, they would just kind of go out into the land. It wasn't public or private land. It was just land. You know, people had not kind of come up with this ownership thing of like absolutely every square inch of land must be owned and generating income for someone, whether it's a government entity or an individual person or a family or something like that. We hadn't come up with that concept yet, but we came up with that concept because we were trying to make it impossible for freedmen to just kind of go out to the woods and start their own communities and recover from slavery. And people who could hunt would hunt and sell their extra meat and sell their, you know, the pelts of these animals and things like that. And they did not have to participate in the white economy until all these laws passed where they couldn't do that. And in the Northeast, it was immigrants. In the Northeast, they did the same thing. Immigrants who brought their hunting traditions from all over the world came to North America to, you know, build their American dream. And we outlawed pretty much every way that they hunt too. So everybody that was hunting in this continent, if they weren't a white male or weren't a wealthy white male even, they were either genocided or outlawed. And that's why it's a white male thing.
No, it's a great socio-political background to your own intrepid efforts to get out there. I do want to say something for anybody who's listening in Ontario and who hunts here and who isn't from one of the big cities like Toronto or so on, like literally the locals where we have a cottage, they hunt because they need the meat. They may be white, and they predominantly are. We're not particularly diverse once you get outside of the city in this province, or maybe even in this country. But they hunt in the fall, and if you get a deer, that's meat for the winter. So I don't mean to personally. I don't mean to make light of the need to you know, bag a moose for the freezer for the winter, and people do that. But for those who do it recreationally, and who field dress and usually give the meat to the locals who work as guides, for those people who do that, it's the thrill of the hunt. Now, did you the thrill of murder? Did you get a sense of that at all in your own experience? Not that I don't think you actually caught it. You did. You got a deer at one point, didn't you?
I definitely kind of stubbornly refuse to end the season until I at least have the chance to shoot at something. and I do get something. Yeah. Murder. Unless I get the chance to murder. Because I think that one of the many questions that endure is, I eat meat. I love meat. I love to cook it, and I love to eat it, and I really don't want to give it up. If I couldn't kill it myself, then I shouldn't eat it. So there is kind of that question confronting me that, man, if I'm too much of a wimp to do it myself, then if I can't stomach, you know, the death of something, then I should stop eating the meat, because buying meat at the store doesn't absolve you. You're just hiring a hitman, right? It doesn't absolve you from guilt. You're just doing it for convenience, right?
So does it make you feel different now when you go to the, the local shopping mart and you buy like a slice of meat? Do you like look at, does it look at you with nice deer eyes?
It's not different for me because I have only been kind of removed from my family's foodways for about one generation. So I don't personally have any delusions about where my food comes from.
So I'm trying to imagine you walking onto the set of Yellowstone. Like so many Americans, I've been watching this stupid series and getting sucked into what happened. And it's 50 years ago, 100 years ago, 150 years ago. But I'm trying to imagine, like, there's no Vietnamese people there. There's no Asian people. There's a couple of indigenous people who, like, they're like scalpers. It's like, it's unbelievable. It's all told through the eyes of the reckless white men who discovered the South. And it's all very loving. And it's all about freedom and independence. But I'm trying to imagine you. So maybe that could be your next series. You could be like 1979, when the Vietnamese came to North America, and you go to Yellowstone.
I think pretty much that is what FOGO is the daughter of these immigrants trying to figure out what is happening outside in this continent.
Wow. And the answer,
but I'm not a Yellowstone girl. I'm a Rutherford Falls girl, so I don't really know what's happening in Yellowstone. For me, you know how I never get mad when comics or just people kind of mix me up with other Asian people, because I personally find it really difficult to distinguish white people. I have global majority blindness. And to me, especially in Austin, I don't know how it is in Toronto. In Austin, the white men on purpose have the same beard, wear the same clothes, drink the same beverages. Do you know what I mean? They're like really, whereas like Asian people, we are not trying to dress alike. We are not trying to look alike, you know, but still, I don't ever want to say anything because I know I'm probably about to make the same mistake, you know, to them. If you two told me that you were sisters or cousins, I absolutely would not question you.
We do kind of look alike. I mean, this is an anomaly. We're dear friends.
Okay, thank you.
We have so much in common.
Thank you for saying it because I didn't want to have to say it.
No, we could easily be confused for each other, which is not the way we planned it. But anyway, that's the way it is. But I hear you.
So when I watch these TV shows, if I can't get into these TV shows because I can't follow the plot because I keep mixing up the characters.
Yeah.
But some have beards.
Not the women.
You know.
Mostly.
Yeah, I don't know.
But why don't you do a podcast that's based on the indoors? Like if you love the indoors, like you said you had a thousand ideas during COVID. Why don't, you know, just do an indoor podcast?
Well, FOGO seems to be working out for Ivy. I don't know if you need, I mean, whether, although you say that you haven't come away with a renewed or a new appreciation for it. I mean, you're doing what you hate, but it seems to be working.
I think because I have an insatiable curiosity and I want indoor people to be able to trust me as a host that I am going to ask the questions that you really want to know. And if you tune in, you are going to learn the thing that they don't show on the TV show, the highly edited, you know, TV show, nature documentary, right? And I do get joy from getting my questions answered, even if I don't physically enjoy being outside. And a lot of times I don't actually have to go outside. You know, when I butchered that hog, when I was learning how to butcher so I would know what to do when I was in the field, it was so cool. I ended up getting to be inside with the renowned chef inside his fancy restaurant on an off day and be behind the counter, like inside the kitchen. It was awesome. I would say most shows, I don't do an indoor show because most podcasts are indoor shows, comedy shows. They take place in theaters. You know, cooking shows, they take place in kitchens, right? Most human beings and most of our culture is indoors. That's why the indoors is so much more compelling than the outdoors where there is just sky and dead leaves and Lyme disease and stars sometimes and Lyme disease, you know? I feel like Lyme disease, stars, like Lyme disease is a... They're not equivalent, you know? Like
you don't get one stars. With the other.
Yeah. What do ticks, do they not come out at night?
Oh, no, they go, you're not supposed to be out at night in the bush. That's probably not advisable because you will get eaten alive. We do have our seasons are very intense.
Why does Wendy keep selling us on the stars?
I know.
Because they're there, man. I didn't realize until I sort of retired that I looked up in the sky and I was like, holy shit, like who knew? There are all these like sparkly white things. Mm-hmm. So they're kind of cool. But that's from my
porch.
Do you guys
have?
I'm not in the bush.
Okay. Do you guys have planetariums in Canada?
Yeah.
Planetariums are awesome. You can see all the stars in the sky and you can also select which time of year, even if it's not your actual, you can time travel with the stars inside of an air-conditioned planetarium.
So you've taken nothing away from this or very little that you would say makes it worth it to go outside.
I go outside so that you don't have to.
Hey there. Just so you know, Mo and I are not just the queens of podcasting.
I'm not sure we're even that, but do go on.
We're not part-time cowgirls.
We just made that up.
But we are writers. We're writers.
Wendy and I write a newsletter on Substack. It's a weekly roundup of thoughts and experiences, sometimes serious, often not.
Yeah, you're pretty funny. You write about falling down a lot. You write about your dog.
I do. You write about sex and politics and COVID.
All very, very serious things. We have a few thousand subscribers, both free and paid.
And you could be one of them if you'd like. Just go to substack.com and look us up by name or go to our website at womenofillrepute.com and sign up there. We'd love to meet you there.
And now back to being the queens of podcasting.
Yeah, sure.
The Women of Ill Repute.
I want to just go back because I don't think we've talked enough about this, and I find it really interesting. And it is about well, eating what you kill. So you specifically went after mammals. You didn't think of maybe, you know, bird shooting birds or because to me, there's a hierarchy. I mean, I love meat. I love lamb. I think they're adorable and delicious. But I do think that if I had to draw the line, I could be a pescatarian or chicken and fish. It's the mammals that really get to me. I just feel that I have a dog. So, you know, I feel a kinship to this type of animal. But you went straight for it. Did you ever think maybe there would be levels of murder that were more acceptable to you, like birds or fishing?
So I'm Buddhist. There is no level of murder that wow. is acceptable. So
wow,
to
you're
me,
a Buddhist.
So I actually want to ask you, why do you think your dog's life or a cow's life or any other mammal's life, I guess, is worth more than a fish or a bird?
Oh, but maybe because they're more intelligent and more nurturing and seem to be capable of a need to be with other warm-blooded creatures.
So ants. Ants who have an extreme sense of community. Do you feel guilty about killing ants?
I don't have a problem with
spiders.
Killing ants.
Yeah.
Okay, why?
I don't know. Because I don't want to kill bumblebees. Not only because they make honey, but because they're cute and fuzzy and, you know, that kind of thing. And yet, but a wasp I hate. These are difficult questions, Ivy, and you're making me think about this maybe more than I'm prepared to. But yeah, I do. I think mammals are hard to kill, and anything that isn't a mammal is probably easier to kill. For I don't know whether it's socially ingrained or just my knee jerk reaction.
I definitely experienced that. Because my perspective matters in the show. Every episode starts with what comedians call a cold open. It's usually like the scene at the beginning of a sitcom that just sets the tone for the episode, but doesn't, it maybe introduces a character, but for the most part, the cold open doesn't impact the plot of the episode. It's just a bit usually, you know. So we have cold opens at the top of every episode of Fogo because I'm a comic, but also because I know that there are not a lot of Vietnamese American comics, women with kids and allergies and ADHD and a raging amount of bisexuality, you know. So I know that there's a lot about my perspective who are Buddhist, you know. There's not a lot of representation of people like me, even though there are millions of people exactly like me, right? So at the top of the episode, we do a cold open, some story from my background to just help ground the listener, whatever background you're from, in what my perspective is, so that the show, the rest of the episode makes sense, right? Well, so there's a couple cold opens where I'm talking about my experience killing a mosquito or an experience choosing a fish to die or an experience like going diving for fish or something like that. And we got feedback where people would say, but what does this have to do with hunting? And I'm like, what do you mean? What does that have to do with hunting? I like literally went and killed an animal, right? But I think there is some cultural difference here between outdoors people and me that I can't be on both sides of it. So I don't know why. No, I never considered a bird, mostly because the big hunting thing here is turkey, and I just don't like to eat turkey that much. That is the bottom line, right? But it also just never occurred to me that there is a difference. I even heard a hunter tell me that, I don't know, I wasn't able to fact check this, but that the Tibetans who live in the mountains who have to, you know, they're not supposed to kill, but what they'll kill is whatever their equivalent, I think it's a yak, whatever their equivalent of our bison is that's indigenous over there, it's a really large animal. They'll kill one of those because they're like, well, at least we can feed more people and we only end up killing one soul and having to make amends from one soul. And for them, that's like, they're like, we if we don't do this, we can't live. And so we're sorry and we'll try to atone for it. But this way we can atone for just one soul.
It's really interesting because right now it seems like there's a battle between the people saying, I love meat and come to my restaurant where you can eat the bones of whatever, whatever, and it's all very groovy. And then on the other hand, you have people saying, well, why is it okay? And we're creating all of this green stuff and vegetables that taste like meat because we're still somehow attached to meat. It's really interesting. And I sort of think that 50 years from now, maybe 20 years from now, we'll look back and we'll go, what was it when we were eating all of these pigs and these cows and these, I don't know whether we'll ever get to ants though. Do you think we'll ever get
We're already there. No, we are already there. Really? There's a whole movement of insect protein.
Insect
ants,
protein.
Crickets.
But that's still killing them. I mean, like caring about the ant. Like
I'm never going to care about the ants, you know? I'm not going to, actually, I have affection for spiders. I think they're what nature's architects, but I don't want to eat them.
Spiders are like the enemy of my enemy is my friend.
Yeah. That's how I feel about them too.
Yeah.
So we think you should do a TV show, only there's a Canadian guy named Eugene Levy who's just started doing, I haven't watched it, but it's called The Reluctant Traveler. It sounds very much like Fogo. So there could be some competition.
I agree. I think it sounds too much like Fogo. And I was doing Fogo before Eugene Levy got his show. It's like he copied my marketing materials, Eugene.
Yeah. That's that thief. That
we'll tell
that
him.
Reverse Nepo. He's a Nepo daddy is what he is. You know who you should meet and we should connect you. Marianne Iveson is actually the voice of Women of Ill Repute. When you hear the finished product, she's the one who introduces the show. And she has a very successful podcast herself called Get Outside. And
maybe they should not meet.
Well, I know, but Marianne does everything. Like she, you know, she cross country skis. She forages. I don't know what she does, but she loves. I do know what she does, but she is the opposite of you, Ivy. And I think it would be hilarious to bring you guys together because you're from different planets, but both outside. One reluctantly, the other one not so much.
I think indoor people would really enjoy that pairing. And if we can get it on TV, I think that would be hilarious because I feel like there'll be a lot of facial expressions communicating a lot of things.
You're a very visual, for someone who's doing a podcast, I love the style of you. Like you're actually out there. I listen to you eviscerate that pig or hog or whatever you call it. And it was probably better than watching, but you definitely feel like you're there. What are you going to do next? What's season 3? Do you have a plan?
God, I hope it's something easy and inexpensive.
What is there after camping and hunting?
I don't know. Somebody pitched us fishing. Somebody pitched us bird watching. We're definitely taking ideas, but I don't know because I feel so chastened because I just made a lot of assumptions about hunting when I pitched it, and nobody, you know, in LA and New York at Spotify who signed off on it, you know, knows anything about hunting either. So everybody was like, yeah, that should be fine. And then it was a total shit show. So now I'm super nervous that any idea I come up with is just going to be terrible. It's just going to turn into a shit show, just like hunting was.
Fishing is good, except didn't you almost drown in camping?
I've almost drowned a couple times off the coast of Lanyu, which is off the coast of Taiwan, when I tried to go diving for fish. But we had pool noodles when I went camping at Inslee Park in Texas.
So you didn't drown.
I think you should pitch ice fishing, which is a very popular sport up here in the winter, where you actually build a little cabin out on the ice and chop a hole. I think you would probably find that really awful, and it would be really amusing for the rest of us. There's a lot of drinking involved,
so terrible.
Too. Yeah, but if you do, then you could come up here and we'll have you back on again and see how you like that. But
what is the point of ice fishing?
Is it just fishing,
but everything's iced over, so you have no choice but to ice fish.
I know. What is the point? There's no stars.
There's no stars. Well, they can't, you know, you shouldn't be out there at night. But I think it's really an excuse to drink is what it is. That's what they're doing in those little huts or God knows what.
Why do y'all need excuses to drink? Just drink.
To the neon sign. Yes. City girl to city girl.
Just in your kitchen, just open your fridge and support a local brewery and just start drinking.
Well, we do that too. Ivy, you're a really interesting person. You're a bisexual Buddhist indoors woman. Are you a single mom or do you have a partner?
I do have a partner.
Oh, good.
I did end up in a straight passing marriage with a man.
Oh.
Well, because the other way, it was illegal.
What was illegal? To have a partner?
Gay marriage was illegal until like 5 minutes ago.
Yeah.
Well, move
it
to
got
Canada.
Legalized after I had my first child.
Really? Wow.
Yeah. So I didn't even get to go celebrate. I had to stay home. So I just made myself a cocktail and watched Birdcage with my baby.
You really are a woman of ill repute. It's a pleasure to meet you. Good luck with everything that you do. We'll be following you.
Yeah. And if you do a new series about ice fishing and you could like marry whoever you want in Canada, like, cause we're very cool that way.
Do you guys allow polygamy? Because we're not allowed.
Yeah.
Whatever. Outlawed
whatever. Canada's Canada cool rocks, man.
No, we don't allow polygamy. Ivy, don't let her lead you astray.
I will literally believe anything you tell me about Canada. Thank you so much for getting me up there, for getting me to the ears of folks, because actually our sound engineer, Robin Edgar, is Canadian.
Oh, hi, Robin.
And her family, her parents are big fans of the show. And our producer, Mariah Gossett, she has family up in Canada too.
Well,
come and see us yourself.
It's a big camp, the Women of Ill Repute, which occasionally involves men.
Yeah, occasionally.
I want to. I love Canadians, except for Eugene Levy's marketing copywriter.
We'll tell him.
Of all people, not
give
to
me
like.
My tagline back.
Lovely to talk to you. And
nice to meet you, Ivy.
We'll set you up with Eugene.
Yeah. Godspeed.
Bye.
Bye. Well, that was fun.
Yeah, she's a ball of fire. She's both a Vietnamese person trying to inhabit the woods and an inside person trying to inhabit the woods. It's great. She's very funny.
She's very funny, and she's also very insightful and obviously very intelligent, and her reasons for going outside, it's almost like she's doing a dissertation as to why people like her don't go outside. There's not a place for them.
I wanted to ask her about, I think her name is Diane Morgan. She does Kunk, which is basically a takeoff of one of Ivy's favorite shows, whether it's mocking or not.
Kunk
I don't
on
know,
Earth,
but
it's called.
Yeah, Kunk on Earth. Diane Morgan of Kunk on Earth makes fun of David Attenborough, and Ivy loves David Attenborough, but she also watches it with a certain amount of satire. So it's just, it's kind of everything all in one.
Yeah.
She's great. I so much like talking to her. I sound weird though. Am I?
You're
do I
sick.
Sound weird?
You know, hello. If you don't know what's going on with Wendy, she's lost her voice. It's the one thing you need for this job.
I know. Well, I was saving myself for Ivy. So yeah. we'll get it back.
You sound frail, but we know that's not the case. So, you know, suck it up, Buttercup. And we'll see you with the next guest.
Okay.
Bye.
Women of Ill Repute was written and produced by Maureen Holloway and Wendy Mesley, with the help from the team at the Sound Off Media Company and producer Yet Belgraver.
Hi, I'm Mercedes Nickel, 4-time Winter Olympian and host of Dropping In, a podcast with Mercedes. This is a podcast where I interview a bunch of different people. I get the good, the bad, and the ugly, as well as I share my stories along the way. Now you can drop in at droppingin.com or subscribe on Apple, Spotify, and YouTube. I'll see you soon.